Hospital rooms in Orlando still house victims of last Sunday's shooting at the Pulse nightclub. 49 people were killed, 53 injured. The shooter also died. But many questions remain about why it happened and whether we could prevent it from happening again. Two nightclubs in Atlanta have already been threatened over social media, and Atlanta's chief medical examiner has decided to expand the city's morgue in case of a similar attack. My first guest says to understand the tragedy in Orlando, you have to understand hate. Ari Kuglansky studies that particular emotion and the way it affects the brain. He's a distinguished professor of psychology at the University of Maryland and joins us now. Good morning, Ari.
Good morning.
So is hate a scientific term? Does that describe something that we can actually track and test for?
Hate is an emotion that can be expressed in people's attitudes, and as such, it can be very well recorded and studied.
How do you separate hate from just anger?
Hate has a specific target. Hate is against somebody specific. Hate of others usually comes from hate of one's own self derives from one's humiliation, one's loss of sense of significance and mattering, and this is then displaced onto others, perceived as the culprit of one's suffering.
So is hate always a concern? Is in terms of, in psychological terms, is hating someone or something always a matter of concern?
It is always a matter of concern because it can develop into violence. It can develop into the kind of phenomena that we see time and time again in terms of shootings, whether it be in Europe or the countless shootings that we have in this country. This is a result of hate that is directed against others. So it is, you know, it is an emotion that comes from self-loathing that is displaced to others, and that results in violence that is justified by all kinds of ideologies. There's been a lot of debate whether it's a hate crime or an act of terrorism, but actually the difference between the two is what kind of ideology is used to justify violence in order to redeem one's lost significance. Is it an anti-gay ideology, anti-LGBT ideology, or is it anti-Muslim ideology? But the function of ideology in both cases is to make it easier to engage in violence.
So you have written that terrorism is not a kind of psychopathology. And this surprises me because it would seem to me that if somebody is willing to kill large groups of people that they don't know who are most likely innocent, that would mean that person is insane. Does it not?
No, it does not. It is something that anyone can be capable of under the right circumstances. Look, we engage in war when we feel that the war is justified. We bomb cities. We suffer collateral damage of innocents. And that is because we feel that our actions are justified under the circumstances. So it is the ideology that interprets those activities as justifiable. In this particular case, you have a person. I'm not saying that a person who is deranged cannot become violent. Of course they can. But under some circumstances, when the society supports violence, when the ideology is in place that justifies violence, then anybody can who suffers from sense of loss of significance and is trying to redeem one's significance by doing something that is empowering would engage in violence.
If you're just joining us, my guest is psychologist Ari Kuglansky. We're talking about the effects of hate on the mind. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts about hatred, whether it's something we can change in ourselves or combat as a people. Tweet us at OST Talk. You know, this is fascinating to me, Ari, and I wonder to what extent you're talking about people who feel as though their circumstances have changed or that they are they feel themselves being disrespected. And I look back at all of the mass shootings that we have, a large majority of them, I think it's over 75%, have been committed by a young white male. And does that where hate enters in? Do we trace pathologies to find out that these are people who became enraged or experienced hate because they felt that something had been taken away from them?
In many cases, school shootings are usually perpetrated by individuals who felt that they are disrespected, they are bullied, they are nerds, that were overpowered by other stronger individuals. It can be members of groups that feel that the United States has been taken over by forces that humiliate them and take away their significance as Americans. So, you know, it can be very personal circumstances of failure and humiliation, as probably was the case with Omar Mateen, or it can be cases where you feel humiliated by virtue of the fact that your group was humiliated. So, for example, many young Muslims who join ISIS are prey to the propaganda that Muslims in general were humiliated by the West, and they, as Muslims, feel the sting of that humiliation, and they feel that they ought to do something about it, redeem their lost honor, and join an organization whose ideology allows them to do so through violence.
But how, you know, here in the American soil, we have lost many more lives to young white males than we have to Muslim terrorists. So how do we detect that? For example, the threats that have been that were posted in social media to two nightclubs, gay nightclubs in Atlanta. How do we take in some of these threats and say this is motivated by hate? This is not.
In many cases, it is motivated by hate, because to be violent against other people means that these others were culprits for some significant loss of personal meaning, humiliation, disrespect. So, you know, there are culprits of violence that are seen as guilty of harming oneself, whether this is objectively justifiable or not. These are people who are seen as guilty and deserving of violence. You know, we cannot eliminate failure and humiliation. Some people would be rejection sensitive. Some people would always feel that they do not receive their just desserts. Some people would feel that they ought to be respected to a greater extent than they actually are. So we cannot do much about that. This will always happen. What we can do something about is to strengthen the obstacles to the use of violence in the interest of redeeming their lost significance.
What obstacles are you talking about? Are you talking about access to firearms?
I'm talking about two types of obstacles. I'm talking of an ideological obstacle. We have to counter ideologies that are anti-certain groups of people, racism, anti-LGBT, anti-Muslim, all kinds of ideologies that target people and allow and condone violence against those groups. So there's the ideological obstacle that once it's removed through these pernicious ideologies, allows the implementation of violence. And the second one is the gun culture that we have in this country, which includes not only the availability of guns, firearms, assault weapons, and what have you, but also the culture, the ideology that attaches to the use of guns, that the kind of Wild West ideology that we ought to, in a vigilante manner, be able to protect ourselves, that you know, we're kind of rough individualists who, with a gun, can face adversity, and this is justifiable, and this is moral.
Now, this suggests, Ari, that you feel that we can't do anything about the existence of hate, that some percentage of our population will always feel hatred toward another person or group.
That percentage can vary depending on whether our system of government can be perceived by most people as just and satisfactory. So we should do our best to take care of the largest number of people in our ability. We should discriminate. We should fight discrimination, fight wage inequality, try to do the best we can to prevent suffering and the feeling of injustice by groups of people. But I think no matter how hard we try and how successful we are overall, there will always be some people who fall out of that distribution and out of that curve and would feel insignificance and failure. There's nothing that can be done about that. We can minimize the number of those people by having a just system of government that takes care of most people. But I think what we should do in our educational system, in our communities, in our media, is combat forcefully ideologies that condone violence and condone discrimination and racism, and also condone and also combat the gun culture that allows the physical obstacle on the obtainment of guns and their use in various ways to exist and to allow violence to spread.
That is Ari Kuglansky. He's a distinguished professor of psychology at the University of Maryland. Ari, thank you so very much.
My pleasure.